Ba 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 ba. Hip and the lip. Ba 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 ba
ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba. On this very lovely Wednesday evening, the 24th of August. Yes, indeed.
We are in New York sports.
A couple weeks away. Kickoff.
Yes.
NFL.
Oh, NFL. We are a New York sports podcast. I am the hip, and this is the lip, bantering about interesting topics in New York sports. We are primarily an Islanders podcast, of course. It's not hockey season right now. We'll mention something for about a minute that's partially related to the Islanders as we are closing in on Labor Day weekend. So we have a show, a lot to cover here as we give you previews of the New York football Giants and the New York Jetropolitans.
That's right. Since the Metropolitans stink, may as well put your focus towards the other Apolitans. That would be the Jets.
With some fantasy football discussion to follow. So before we get right to it into the NFL, what would you like to share about the Islanders?
What would I like to share about the Islanders? Well, I guess last time we talked about that Vesey guy and how the Islanders were actually one of the finalists to land his services. List his services for next year and beyond. And unfortunately for us, of course, out of every team that was on the list, and there were six, seven, however many, he goes to the New York Ragholes, Rangers, Raggies, them, the other jerks in New York City. So I guess not can't be that surprised. They are the Rangers. They usually get what they want. And Jimmy Vesey will be a New York Ranger for the next few years.
So I'll just practice, you know, my Sam Rosen call for opening night. Vesey on a breakaway. He scores!
Ooh. Is it a power play goal, though? Yeah, then you have to go, it's a power play goal! And an Islander fan say, screw you, Sam Rosen.
That'll be the second goal that Vesey scores in the game. It'll be a power play goal.
Even better.
All right.
Next.
I mean, what did I say the last time? That it was thrilling that the fact that he was considered by the Islanders were in the consideration, but we knew that he wasn't going to sign with the Islanders.
Oh, I'm sure that the Islander owners were like, oh my, he's actually considering signing with us. Oh my. Let's roll out the red carpet for him and wine and dine him. Guess it didn't work, though.
In the obstructed view seats. Oh, wine and dine, obstructed view.
Or we could do it happened, probably the SUV. He probably stepped on the ice and it started cracking beneath him. Whoops.
inside the SUV next to the ice. Oh, so luxurious.
He probably said, I want to see how good this ice is. Drive that SUV on the ice right now. And the Islanders were like, all right, I'm out of here.
All right. So let's get right to it. Let's talk about football. I mean, it's August 24th. The third week of the preseason, the third weekend of preseason teams, preseason games take place starting tomorrow, Thursday. The third preseason game is typically considered the dress rehearsal for NFL teams, although they still, you know, if there's any cautiousness to be exited players, they all normally sit anyway. That being said, you know, these teams sometimes use their starting offenses and defenses into the third quarter. So it really, when you start watching this, you start feel like you're watching, you know, really competitive NFL games. And of course, it's fantasy football draft season. So, you know, the people are, well, some more diligent players than others. And I think we have players on different ends of the spectrum on this show are preparing themselves for their drafts, or as I would highly recommend to anyone listening, auctions. Auctions are much better than drafts. But before we get into the fantasy talk, let's talk about our local football teams. We really, on this show, within the last few months, have only touched upon the Jets, and that was when the Jets signed or re-signed Ryan Fitzpatrick to
it. Yes, and that was at the time the Hip's longest, well, I guess I shouldn't say uninterrupted, but solo segment on the show until we moved on to the Daily Fantasy Sports, and then he had the floor for that, you know, entire or most of that segment as well. But yes, that's pretty much been the extent of our Jets talk on Hip and the Lip so far.
So let's recap here. The New York Giants last year finished 6-10.
Terrible year. Awful year.
They
bad.
Third place, Dallas was 4-12 on the season. Just from a standings perspective, is a bad year. They easily allowed the most points in the division. At the same time, they scored the most points by a wide margin, actually.
Still an awful year.
It felt like, you know, if there's one thing I could remember about the Giants season last year, was they lost a lot of close games where they had the lead late in the game and it just slipped away.
No, they did. They had multiple games where they didn't close it out early in the season. I mean, I remember that Atlanta game, the Dallas game, early, the first game of the season against Dallas. It seems like they play Dallas the first game every single season now, which is kind of strange how they – it's always Sunday night, too. It's always a Sunday night football game.
Is that the case this year?
It's the case again this year, as it was last year, as it's been at, I think, at least like four times they have played Dallas in Dallas – and, you know, Jerry's Dome, the opening Sunday night game of the year. So go figure.
Okay, so I'll just, to add to that, I'll just say Tom Coughlin is no longer the New York Giants football coach, which kind of seems weird to say, having, you know, gone through mostly ups with the team with two Super Bowl rings. Hard to say that, you know, for any coach for any team in the NFL these days, whether past or present. So it's Ben McAdoo at the helm. It's his team this year. And I'm curious to hear from you, your thoughts, you know, on the offensive and defensive side of the ball. There's plenty of new faces on this team. So
yeah, there are.
Have at it, Lip. You're the resident New York Giants fan and expert.
Well, I want the Hip's take too. You know, I want you to you know, chime in if you hear something that you want to expand upon or disagree or agree
with. Or cut me off.
just pick the right spot to go. And actually, I want to add something to what you're saying. but yeah, I mean, the biggest thing was that the fact that Tom Coughlin, who, as you mentioned, won two Super Bowls with the team, was head coach of the team for 12 years. You know, he was very much a favorite of the late Wellington Mara. That's why they brought him in after Jim Fossil was fired. But the bottom line is, you mentioned the two Super Bowls, obviously a ton of success with the team. You know, made the playoffs, you know, a few other times as well. But the last 4 years, the Giants have not been a good football team. They have missed the playoffs now 4 years in a row. That's very un-Giant-like. It was just time for a change. It was time to move on. I was not at all surprised by the change. I mean, it was talked about the year before, and they decided to give it one more go, and it just didn't work out. The team was very flawed last year. Their defense, as you mentioned, was abominable. It was one of the worst, if not the worst, Giant defense in the history of the team. I mean, a team that's known for defense. You go back to the days of Sam Huff and then through the days of Harry Carson and LT and Carl Banks and, you know, and then Michael Strahan and, you know, the guys that won Super Bowls with, you know, Coughlin the last, 10 years or so. And the defense last year gave up, they were the last ranked defense in the league. They have been known for rushing the passer over the, you know, Tom Coughlin teams have rushed the passer very well. They were third to last in total sacks. I mean, the team generated no pressure on the quarterback. Their secondary was atrocious. I mean, secondary coverage breakdowns left and right. Steve Spagnuolo, who will return as defensive coordinator, as Giant fans remember, he was the coordinator for the first Super Bowl. They bring him back after a failed stint as a head coach. And the team was just at least defensively, they were miserable. And really offensively, it was two guys that made the team go offensively. You mentioned that they had the most points in the division. Their offense, you know, put up points last year. You remember that ridiculous game against the Saints when they combined for like 100 points or whatever it was. Right. And both Eli and Drew Brees, I think both in that game, threw six touchdowns.
Right.
I mean, like, what is this, like a Madden 7-16 game, like between two Madden geeks? I mean, like, what the hell is going on here? 12 touchdown passes total, and it was just an exhibition of a horrific defense from both teams. Not that Brees and Manning are not good quarterbacks, but it was, you know, Beckham and Manning last year that drove the Giant offense. And you know, this year you wonder how different that offense will look. And you know, the transition now from Coughlin to McAdoo, who, of course, you know, was the offensive coordinator the last couple of years, was brought in a couple of years ago, much to the chagrin, at least, I think, of Tom Coughlin, as he didn't run a similar offense to what McAdoo run. You know, McAdoo ran a variation of the West Coast offense under Tom McCarthy and Green Bay for all those years. And but the one thing I'll say is that Eli Manning settled into it really, really, you know, had some ups and downs his first year with it, but really grew into it last year. I think they utilized, you know, Manning's strengths very well. Manning obviously is one of the best throwing the ball down the field, and they didn't throw the ball down the field as much in the Ben McAdoo offense like they did in the Coughlin offense, but they still kept it incorporated within the offense. And obviously, when you have a weapon like Odell Beckham, you're going to try and do whatever you can to get the ball to him, and we'll get to him in a few minutes. But, I mean, really, the offseason for the Giants was about their giant overhaul of their defense. They spent $200 million about in free agency. They bring in, you know, high-profile defensive players, Janoris Jenkins from St. Louis, the cornerback, Olivier, who apparently was named after Laurence Olivier, the famous actor, Olivier Vernon, who was a former defensive end with the Miami Dolphins, and a former New York Jet, Mr. Hip, Jet fan, Stamen Snacks Harrison, the giant mammoth Ted Washington-like defensive tackle that'll slip right in alongside Vernon. And JPP, of course, was brought back as well on a one-year deal, you know, kind of a make-it-or-break-it year for him. But that defensive line, you look at that defensive line and what the potential it has this year, you know, with Hankins and Jonathan Hankins, who they returned this year, who is a very solid, good defensive tackle, with Harrison in the middle, and then JPP, who looks like he could really get back to being at least a semblance of the player that he was before he had his little fireworks hand blowing up accident. You know, comes back last year, as you remember, with that big giant club on his hand, and it just looks so awkward, him playing and rushing the passer and trying to, you know, play the run and just play the position. And you know, he really just seemed like really never grew comfortable with it. Still was very athletic, and you could tell was in good shape. And, he looked like he had something to give, but it was just a difficult transition. He had another surgery in the offseason. Apparently, everything they hear from the Giants camp is that he is really going to get back to that. They expect him to get back to what he was, that he's comfortable now with the way his hand is, that he should be able to grip the way, like, they're gonna have some glove over his hand. I'm not even exactly sure what they did, but he's not gonna have that giant club this year. And they said he's in amazing shape, and they have very high expectations for him, along with Vernon on the other side. And obviously, I mentioned Janoris Jenkins in the secondary. They also bring in Keenan Robinson, a linebacker from Washington who had been injured, been injury-prone during his career but has talent. Leon Hall, a guy that was just signed from Cincinnati, the former Pro Bowl cornerback. So they bring in him. They draft Eli Apple in the first round, another cornerback, and they brought in a lot of new defensive guys, and they expect that defense to be much better this year. And you would think it should be, because they have a lot more talent on that side of the ball. So questions, of course, with the defense: how will that secondary kind of sort itself out? Slot guys, who's going to, you know, be the outside guys? Will it be Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie and Jenkins, which you would expect? Of course, Rodgers-Cromartie comes back from last year. How do they incorporate Eli Apple, the rookie? Hall, I mean, he's looked at as a slot guy, but are they going to rotate guys? How are they going to handle that? That'll be interesting to see.
I read somewhere that Hall was getting some reps at safety.
Oh, yeah, I think I remember seeing that too. Yeah, so, and they have, young guys at safety. You know, thank you for bringing that up. They draft Darian Thompson, who at safety, who they love. They rave about him. They bring back the rookie from last year. What was his name? Oh, Collins. Collins, the strong safety that they drafted in the second round last year. They moved up to get. They still have very high expectations for him. You know, had his growing pains in his rookie year, but they really like Collins and Thompson. And yeah, I mean, it would make sense if Hall can play the position, kind of like an Antrel role. Who we remember was a cornerback, came here, you know, converted to a safety, and really picked up that position really well. So you expect, I mean, hopefully Hall is athletic enough and has the awareness to be able to kind of grow into that position and provide some veteran leadership with the young guys. So, yeah, they will have some questions. Again, cornerback and linebacker. We'll see how that sorts itself out. They have never, at least, Giants have been known for having great linebackers. You know, guys I mentioned a little while ago, and they just refuse to ever draft a linebacker. Higher really than the third or fourth round. They don't bring in high profile linebackers, but Devin Kennard, a guy that they really like, that's been on the team now for a couple of years, but just been injury prone. If he stays on the field, they really like him. Very talented player, but they have the makings to be a really good, solid defense, if not better than that. So we shall see how that plays out, but much more talent on that defense going
So
into
do you
next
give
year.
credit to Reese to making moves to address really what was their downfall last year and previous years?
Yeah, and Reese had a couple years there where he had couple terrible off seasons. I mean, let's be fair. You evaluate the way the team performed over the last couple of years, and a lot of it could be attributed to Reese's drafting, which had not been very good. His free agent pickups, which have been questionable, and majority of which over the last few years have not worked out. But looks like they spent a lot of money. Again, they didn't go out and get lower profile under the radar guys. I mean, Vernon Jenkins, Harrison, all big name, high profile, high priced free agents. So you expect them to again, all talented guys too, and guys that are still in the primes of their career. That's the other thing, is that they're not over the hill. They've already established themselves as like veteran guys, and you hope that they have a couple years left in the tank. I mean, these are all guys that are relatively young. And Vernon, I was surprised that Miami didn't franchise him, that they let him go. That was very surprising to me. I mean, he's a guy that Pro Football Focus, that website that I guess quantifies how good players are, where you can't always tell by the stats. I mean, Pro Football Focus says that this guy is in the quarterback's kitchen, in the backfield quite often, even if his sack numbers don't reflect that. So hopefully, if they can get pressure up the middle and he has more opportunities to be able to use his speed and strength to get to the quarterback and bring him down. He may end him and JPP may end up combining for who knows, maybe like 25 to 30 sacks between the two of them, which would equal what the team I think had last year. I think the team had like between 25 and 30 sacks. So I mean, that's a little those
So,
expectations may be a little
is their
lofty,
base
but
defense going to be a 4-3?
I would imagine so. I mean, that's Spagnuolo. He's a 4-3 guy. He's not a 3-4 guy. I mean, Harrison is can definitely play the nose in a 3-4, which he did for the Jets, of course. But I think they will, have him play that position in the 4-3 alongside Hankins. Two big guys that, I mean, it's going to be very difficult to run up the middle against the Giants this year. I mean, their run defense last year was actually not terrible, but they are going to be very difficult to run against this year with those two behemoths in the middle of that
And
defensive
if you
line.
have Pierre Paul not even having to return to the form that he showed, but something even slightly less than that, you get some pressure, and the Giants are going to win football games on this defense, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, the Giants are going to win more football games than last year. Barring injuries, of course, they will win more games than last year. And they are right now a trendy pick. I mean, a lot of people want to pick the Giants in that division, to win it.
So how are things going to shake out running back? Last year, I mean, there were points where you had four guys getting a series in a row. I mean, it was ridiculous with Rashad Jennings. Let's see if I can name them all. Shane Vereen, Andre Williams, and Orleans Darkwa.
That's right. Orleans Darkwa. That's right.
And there was even a game, I think, against the second game against the Cowboys, where Orleans Darkwa was getting a lot of reps. I guess what I'm getting at here is last year they just never – it never felt like they had a reliable running game because they didn't really use anyone consistently until towards the end where Rashad Jennings carried the mail. How are they going into it this year? Is Rashad Jennings going to get, you know, 70% of the carries-ish, maybe more? Is Andre Williams – Andre Williams has not really shown – that he is a quality NFL running back. I mean, he's built to be a between the tackles guy, but he just hasn't really, I don't understand. He just hasn't really broken through. So how do you see this backfield shaking out?
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned Andre Williams. Williams, actually, they have higher expectations for him this year. Your first question, I honestly don't know the answer. I don't know what – I mean, I've heard Ben McAdoo talk about power, physical, running game, you know, get the running game going.
Who's the power? I mean, Rashad Jennings is not like a Chris Ivory violent, you know.
No.
He's good and he's solid, but he's not, you know.
Oh, no, he's not a dynamic running back. Over. No, I mean, but he can run between the tackles. I mean, he's decent at that. He's not a dynamic running back. He's not going to, you know – blow you away with his flashiness or his, agility or speed or anything like that.
He's like 30 years old.
Yeah, I think it's good to have a guy like Jennings on your team. I think he is just a solid football player.
Yes,
you know, he can play, he can pick up the blitz. He's a guy that he's not really going to catch that many balls out of the backfield, but he's a solid football player. Andre Williams, actually, they have higher expectations for this year because he came to camp a lot lighter, a lot more trim, slimmed down. He kept basically everything you heard about him was how different he looks this year than last year. And he's actually looked okay in the preseason. The Giants offense has looked awful in the preseason, and we'll get to the offense. They have looked awful in the preseason. Andre Williams actually has looked pretty good. He's actually looked a lot quicker, a lot more nimble. He can still run between the tackles. He's still, you know, a big running back, but he definitely has – he realized that he cannot carry the weight like he did in college because it's such a different game, you know, running in college and running in the NFL.
And it's Andre Williams is 23 years old. Rashad Jennings is 31 years old. Yeah. I mean, if you give Rashad Jennings 80% of the carries, he's not going to last all year.
Well, he won't. So I would be surprised if they do. I don't know I really don't know what their plan is. Is it going to be a complete committee? Are they going to, you know, try to establish one guy, you know, as a first and second down type running back and then maybe have Vereen? I thought Vereen would have much more of an impact in the passing game last year. A lot of people did. The fantasy geeks did. We all did. And he really didn't.
I mean, PPR gold.
PPR, or half a point PPR, or full PPR. A lot more value. And, you know, as much value as Vereen had at least a couple of years with the Patriots in the PPR fantasy leagues last year, other than a couple of games where he, you know, caught some balls, he really was not utilized consistently in the passing game. So I honestly don't know what their game plan is in terms of, you know, the running backs. Are they going to, again, establish, you know, just have a committee and, you know, go with the hot hand? Or are they going to try to establish one guy and then, you know, maybe rotate on third down and, you know, just depending on how the game flow, or, you know, I honestly don't know what they intend to do in terms of the running game, but they have a couple of guys and, you know, nobody is ultra flashy or, you know, nobody's a game breaking type running back, but they're, you know, they have again, solid guys. Williams looks like he should be better this year. Jennings, you know what he can bring. And, you know, Vereen, I think will be one thing I will say is I was just saying I was surprised how little he was utilized in the passing game last year. I think Vereen will have an increased role in the passing game this year than he did last year. I agree. I absolutely agree.
They could line him out wide in the slot, too. I mean, he doesn't have to come out of the backfield. They could have multiple backs on the field.
Yeah,
just
he
so
is.
That it's not a complete obvious passing situation. They could, you know, line him out there and still run the football. I don't know how good of a blocker he is, but
I mean, I think he's pretty good at picking up the blitz. And, you know, he could be a safety blanket for Eli Manning. That's what he should be that.
So a guy that kind of came out of nowhere, at least for me, from the tight end position for the Giants was Will Tye, right?
Yeah, Will Tye.
T-Y-E. Yep. Is he going to be – is he the default starter?
No, I don't think – I think they expect Larry Donald to come back.
So he's still on the Giants, Larry Donald or Donnell?
Larry Donnell, yep. Yep, he's still there.
Donnell got hurt, And that's when Ty stepped in and actually did okay for a guy that physically just didn't look like he would be a pass catcher, but he kind of gobbled. He had a few good games, actually. So it's going to be Janelle as the default starter. Okay. All right. Well, you know, I mean.
Most likely. We'll see how that plays out.
Those guys, I don't think, are going to, you know, be in the upper echelon of offensive tight ends in the league, but they are serviceable. So.
Yeah, and they have a rookie also that they like, Jarrell Adams. I've heard them talk about him a couple of times.
Okay.
He's a pretty good blocker, and he's athletic. They think he can improve in the passing game. So for you fantasy guys, if something happens to Larry, Donnell, Donald, or Will Tye, I'm not even sure Will Tye's going to make the team, honestly, but Jarrell Adams is definitely a guy that they keep an eye on potentially. But I honestly don't think that tight end will ever – at least in the Ben McAdoo offense, be a big part of the Giants' passing attack.
So anything from training camp for the Giants that has caught your attention?
I mean, the big story, we're going to get to Josh Brown. I think you know where I'm going to go with that. I have some choice words for everybody involved with that situation. And I think it's something that we should, I think we should definitely talk about it. In terms of the big storyline, you know, at the beginning of throughout most of training camp has been Victor Cruz. I mean, that's been the biggest story. You know, is he healthy? Can he stay healthy? You know, can he, you know, be that veteran presence in the wide receiver core for the Giants, which is, you know, for the most part, young guys? You know, can he stay on, you know, will he get on the field? And he has not been on the field. He's been in and out of practice during training camp. He got hurt again. I don't remember exactly what he did. Something with his leg.
I think it was groin.
Oh, it was groin. Okay. Yeah. So it wasn't his knee. I know it wasn't his knee. Here's the bottom line with Victor Cruz. He has to be on the field Saturday night against the Jets, and he has to demonstrate that he can still play. If he does, great, and then you hope that he stays healthy. If he doesn't, if he comes out, comes up lame again or just looks like he doesn't really have anything left in the tank, the Giants are going to have to make the tough decision and part ways with Victor Cruz. I think the time has come that if he can show you, demonstrate that he can play, if he can stay healthy, if he can stay on the field, if he can stay, you know, practice and get on the field and demonstrate that he can play, fine, great. And you want him to, because he, again, would be a very important cog in that Giant offense and would be very important to the Giant passing game and being a guy that you can line up anywhere and make tough catches over the middle and make tough third down catches if Beckham is double covered or whatever. But if not, the Giants are going to have to make the tough decision, I think, and finally part ways with Victor.
So the window's kind of closing, and he's done zero.
He has done nothing. Yeah,
and
it's a shame because came out of nowhere. Such a great story. Undrafted, came out of nowhere, has that amazing game against the Jets, the Giants Super Bowl year, and established himself as a top wide receiver in the league for a couple of years, and then had that horrific knee injury against the Eagles on Sunday night a couple of years ago.
As bad of a knee injury as you can have, essentially.
Oh, horrific. Oh, yeah. You just saw him go down, and it was just so ugly. And, last year he had the calf problem all year. It was just a nagging thing initially. Okay, you should be fine. His knee hopefully holds up. And a whole year it just kept him off the field, eventually had surgery, and, eventually ruled out for the year. But this Saturday to me is make it or break it for Victor Cruz.
We're not even sure if he's going to suit up yet.
I don't know, but I think he is back in practice. I think he did practice. He was on the practice field, I think, today. I think.
Okay. Well, we'll see. Okay. Yep. All right. So, I have seen headlines about Josh Brown, the Giants kicker. So tell us what's going on there.
I mean, where do we start? Do we start with the Giants? Do we start with the NFL and Roger Goodell? This is a situation where the NFL, time and time again, just when you think that they finally learned their lesson, and we all know, we don't have to rehash Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson and Greg Hardy and, all the other cases of whether it's domestic violence or whatever. And we jabbed the Mets, we gave them a little bit of a hard time on Hip and Lip a couple of weeks ago. And, maybe we should have been harsher with the Mets. I mean, Reyes was suspended, the Major League Baseball, despite the fact that Reyes was not charged. right? He wasn't charged, right? That was eventually dropped. So, I mean, despite the fact that he was released and not charged, the Major League Baseball had enough evidence where they said, you are getting suspended. Now, you can always argue whether or not a suspension is too lenient, too harsh, just, you know, right, whatever. There's always debate there. It's never black and white. It's always, you know, touchy situation. Well, I rephrase. I'll say it's without having all the facts, you can never make an accurate judgment as to what action should be taken, especially when no criminal charges are brought. In this case, though, we'll start with the NFL. For the NFL to suspend Josh Brown for one game and hide behind all this nonsense and garbage that they have put out over the last couple of days after the suspension came down. You know, the NFL, he wasn't charged. We didn't get enough information. You know, she didn't cooperate with us. You know, when there are because the NFL now, remember, has a policy where if you are a first-time offender of domestic violence, you are suspended 6 games. However, oh, really? There's a but. Who would have thought that the NFL would have a but in there? But if there are mitigating circumstances, then the NFL has discretion as to whether or not they should suspend them, that player, 6 games or less. And I think what it means is that's just NFL doublespeak for, well, if the news cycle is not demonstrating public outrage and we'll react dependent upon whether or not the media is portraying this as something that we have to take serious action on as opposed to just sweeping it under the rug like we always do, then that's what we'll do. We'll just suspend them for a game, hide behind our legal rhetoric, jargon, mumbo-jumbo, nonsense. And we'll just, sweep it under the rug like we always do. Well done, NFL. Well done. You did it again. Fabulous job, Roger Goodell, of saying, we don't take this issue seriously. We could care less about enforcing this policy, which, we came out, with this tough stance after all this happened, and we got it wrong, and we're going to get it right from now on. Again, just public posturing from the ultimate spin machine that is the NFL that only cares about the bottom line, and that is all the billions of dollars they're making. It's just, you just, because there was no video, because you didn't have the public outrage of Ray Rice, and this is not a high profile player, just a kicker, the NFL was able to once again sweep it under the rug, give him a little slap on the wrist despite all the overwhelming evidence that Josh Brown committed some pretty rotten acts and towards his wife and now ex-wife. There was supposedly more than 20 instances of physical abuse. He was arrested. For the NFL to put out that nonsense and treat us like we're all morons, it's just insulting. And you're just so sick and tired of this crap from the NFL. I don't know what you think, but
is this mitigating circumstances provision?
Mitigating circumstances.
Is this something that we knew about? Is it something that they came out and told us about under the new domestic abuse policy, or do you think they kind of conjured it up to use in this episode and potentially future ones? Do you think they did it kind of on the fly here, or they had it in their back pocket and they plan to use it at some point? Do we know if this is something that was like written in stone?
It probably was. I'm sure that they had it written in wherever the NFL bylaws, wherever they document this
but
stuff.
But I'm sure they didn't boast it when they announced the new policy of
I'm sure they did not.
Per se mandatory 6-game minimum suspension on first infraction. So now here it is, and I bet you a lot of people have not even heard that they use this mitigating circumstances card because the player is a kicker and who cares, even though he's in New York. I mean, it's out there. You've seen some headlines, but not to the level of detail that you've even, as far as like coverage.
But the NFL, see, here's what's insulting is that the NFL acted as if they had no one. See, they justified this suspension with, well, we didn't have enough information. She didn't cooperate with us. We couldn't get our hands on police records and reports and blah, blah, blah. Except every single media outlet that wanted to get this information did. And they were the ones that told the NFL, hey, NFL, 20 instances of documented physical abuse. NFL, well, we didn't know. We didn't get this. We tried. We couldn't. what do you want us to say? Just like the nonsense that they gave during the Ray Rice saga. It was, oh, well, we didn't have the video. We didn't know. We had no idea. It's the same.
Well, they did go back and suspend Rice for more games, right? After
he was suspended indefinitely. And it was, of course, Baltimore couldn't keep him on a team. They just released him. And I think he eventually appealed and was reinstated. But at that point, nobody wanted to touch him with a 10-foot pole. Who the hell is
that? Wasn't there a maybe it wasn't Ray Rice. Wasn't there another situation where they levied a suspension, then more evidence came out and they extended it? Maybe it wasn't Ray Rice. Well, anyway, we'll see what they do. Maybe this gets picked up on a bigger scale and they end up suspending Josh Brown more. But my guess is it's just going to go away and nothing's going to happen.
As it always does. And I hate coming out, you know, jumping on the soapbox and coming down with like this righteous condemnation. And because it's, I guess it's, you know, easy for me. But at the same time, it's just the NFL. It's not difficult for them just to do what they know that they're supposed to do and just, you know, act upon your own rule that you enacted for this situation. And there's no mitigating circumstances. It's just insulting that they put this out there. You know, don't even suspend them at all then. You know, just say, hey, we didn't have any information. And at least I would almost rather them do that than just give them a one-game suspension and then insult us with the press releases that they put out.
The NFL gets the last laugh anyway because they know that you and I are going to watch. We're going to watch the games as much as we have in the previous years, and we're going to go to the games and spend the money, and we're not going to act any differently in our enjoyment of the product, even though they continue to screw up these off the field situations.
Yeah, and they took a bit of a PR hit after Ray Rice and then Adrian. I mean, it was just a.
But they recovered, they recover and they're doing fine. So I don't know. I want to say until a player does this, it's going to be screwed up. But then I was going to say until a player committed murder. But oh wait, former New England Patriot in jail. So and the beat goes on. So.
And don't forget Ray Lewis being employed by ESPN and being an NFL analyst, despite the fact that he may have been involved in a murder too.
Remember, that's what we know, and who knows what guys have gotten away with, you know, that haven't been charged. So, again, we're acting on what we know. The reality is, it's going to be easily the most popular professional sports in the United States, and I don't really see anything like this stuff changing that. I don't know what it would take to change it. I really don't. I mean, you had the whole Deflategate thing, which was nuts, still going on.
And Goodell took a lot of criticism for that too. And I didn't really jump on him for that. And I think he was definitely looking for a power grab there to exert his dominance and his authority as commissioner. You know, with the whole Ted Wells report, and then that was just such an embarrassment for the NFL, but for both parties too. I don't look at Tom Brady as a sympathetic figure in that. It was just embarrassing for both sides.
We keep saying embarrassing, but really, I mean, the NFL's popularity is not taking a step back.
Oh no, so it's not. It was still embarrassing.
What's the harm? Embarrassing, but there's no harm. What's the harm, really, that they're sustaining from this stuff? I don't know if there's anything tangible.
Other than
people mock them in the media, but we all keep crawling back and tuning in.
There's a game missed because watching of the it more than any other lockout. Sport. Yeah, it's not going to happen. Remember the Michael Vick outrage? Yeah. Remember how there was for Michael Vick? I mean, that's really we remember Ray Rice, but think about Michael Vick, how much outrage there was that he for what he did. You know, and look, what he did was terrible too. But it seemed like there was like much more outrage for that. But even then, you know, I heard people would call up, WFAN talk shows. I'm never gonna watch the, I'm an Eagle fan because I have to sign with the Eagles. I'm so disgusted. I'm never gonna watch the, And
how many people?
Right, exactly. And until it affects the bottom line, until the NFL misses a week because of a lockout or a strike, they're gonna always come out.
I think that's what it'll have to take. I really can't see. It has to be. Like the fact that the games aren't happening. I really don't see what else can happen off the field that's going to stop people from unless something so like that hits people in their pockets, where price tickets get so absurd or.
Well, we'll get to that in a moment because I want to trash the Giants owner too.
If they like start blacking games out because you don't have a certain channel, like stuff like that can really piss people off, but we don't have that. So
Well, they still do block out games, the NFL, if they still have that rule in effect, that stupid antiquated rule from the early 70s. Team doesn't sell out a game or whatever the capacity, percentage capacity is. They will block out a game in that market. So they still do.
Which is nuts. All right. So you want to touch upon...
Yeah, well, I know. I've already spent...
Jets, something about the PSLs?
Yeah, well, I know. I feel like we've already spent a lot, you know, too much time on this. I feel like we've almost equaled what we talked about the Giants preview for this upcoming season. But I as much as I trashed on the NFL and Roger Goodell, how about John Mara? How about John Mara coming out today and coming off as almost like a defiant and willful and just defensive, and how dare you call in the question or, you know, impugn my judgment and bringing back this player? Of course, talk about Josh Brown. And I mean, and I don't like, I really dislike John Mara. The main reason being that he enacted PSLs upon Giant fans, and which to me is just, and, you know, you as the attorney, you know, I think it's legalized extortion. I think it's just a legal form of stealing money from people, but whatever. That's a separate issue. But for him to come out in the manner that he did today, I'm just astounded at how a franchise that prides itself supposedly on having integrity and doing the things the proper way, which he talked about today, for him to knowing that all this took place, to bring back Josh Brown, sign him to a 2-year deal coming off of a Pro Bowl year, Brown last year, for them to come out in this manner and defend themselves, and for him to defend the organization for the decision that they made, you lose respect for him, and you lose respect for the Giants organization. And, you know, the Giants organization looked at as one of the premier franchises, not just in the NFL, in all sports, just, you know, Wellington Mara and, you know, Mara's, you know, father, grandfather building that franchise, helping form the modern NFL as we know it today, you know, going back to the 50s, 60s, whatever. And I think, if you want my opinion, I think that John Mara knew that the NFL was investigating it. He thought that there was not going to be enough evidence that this would ever come out in the public light, that they would never have to suspend him. Nobody would ever know. They can just completely sweep it under the rug where nobody would even know about it, and they can, you know, come out unscathed. Well, didn't happen. The Giants' plan blew up in their faces. Now they have to come out and defend themselves and get out in front of it. So that's what today's sideshow dog, you know, defense of the Giant organization nonsense from John Mara was today. And I
so you're saying they should have just cut him when they found out, whatever they found out.
Is it tough for them to cut him now? Yeah, it makes them look stupid because, like I said, I really think that they thought that nothing would come of it. That's why they brought him back for 2 more years.
But what you're saying is, I mean, look, at this point, obviously they're going to defend what they did. What are they going to say? Oh, you know, we should have cut him. We should have.
But they brought it on themselves because they knew about it.
Yes, Ben Matthew, so
domestic violence is not going to be tolerated. Now it's a case by case basis. It makes them look terrible. What should they have done today?
Cut him. This is what you're saying, I guess, right? I mean,
well,
when?
Well, what they should have done is acknowledge what happened and when it did happen and not bring him back. I think that's what they should have. I mean, that's what they absolutely should have done.
Yeah. Okay.
Just if they cut him today after signing him, knowing this, it makes them look stupid. And they have to double down on what they did as opposed to cutting their losses and just, you know, taking a
bath. And more dirt's going to come up on him potentially as this, you know, as this continues to unfold. So keep that.
Who knows? Maybe there'll be a video that'll come out and then the NFL, I guess, will have to come out. Oh, well, we didn't know. All right. Well, I guess that's enough of that.
All right.
Let's, I mean, unless.
let's do a bit of Jets. A Jets preview here.
New York, J-E-T-S, Jets.
So the Jets had a pretty good year last year, 10-6. They missed the playoffs by one game. Pretty heartbreaking end to what I would say a surprisingly good offensive season for the Jets. Their defense.
Rexy and the Bills.
Yeah. Well, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick overachieved. You know, is a player with a limited skill set. We've talked about him before on the show. But he got the most out of his offensive players and really just stumbled in the last game of the year against one of his former teams and Rex Ryan, and they missed the playoffs. And this was a year, this meaning last year, had the Jets made the playoffs, Super Bowl would not have been too inconceivable considering the competition. I mean, there was just no real – I mean, the Denver defense was what carried them and not Peyton Manning last year. But there was no, like, ultra-dominant team on both sides that would have stopped the Jets. They could have won. It was – you know, some years you have a few teams that are just clearly head and shoulders above the rest going into the playoffs. Last year was not one of those years. We'll see how it plays out this year. But, you know, I felt like everything was kind of coming together for the Jets. And they just couldn't get over the hump and get in. And then you have the whole off season, you know, right up until the start of training camp where they, you know, the Fitzpatrick and his camp and the Jets are playing a game of poker over, you know, whether they're going to re-sign him as their quarterback when the Jets really didn't have any other options and Fitzpatrick didn't really have any other options. So we all kind of knew it would happen. It was just a matter of how and when. And it did. So he's back. I believe there's an option for a second year. But he's back for this year. And
well, both sides need each other. And you know, they got it done. And, yep. You know, he will be starting quarterback day one. He will be your starting quarterback.
Certainly the case. And so, you know, they did make some significant changes on offense. Most similarly, you know, Chris Ivory out and Matt Forte in.
Matt Forte, a.k.a. Matt Slote.
Well, you know, we say that because he doesn't come off as the speediest of receivers. But ever since he came into the league, which now, if I had to say when, it probably was around 2007 or so, 2008. So he's been in the league a while.
Yeah, he's been in the league, I would say, at least like six, yeah, at least seven.
And maybe towards seven. The top of leaders and receptions of all running backs of active players in the NFL. I did not look that up, but I'm guessing he's up there. He's got to be towards the top of the list. I can't think really of
him. He's a very accomplished back. I mean,
he's very accomplished, but, you know, running backs generally don't.
Yep, the shelf life.
Age well, once they get into their 30s, especially a guy like Forte, who does have a lot of mileage, playing so many years and being the lead back for most every year that he's been in the league. So he's there, and I think he was battling a hamstring injury, but I think it's minor. I think he's going to be fine. I think he's expected to carry the load there. They do have Bilal Powell coming back.
That's
he's
right.
He's always been a solid guy to catch passes out of the backfield and, you know, fight for some extra yards. He's not a violent runner. He's quite the opposite, actually. But, you know,
he's a good change of pace back. He's definitely a guy that can,
I think the Jets are
5-6 touches a game.
They are going to miss Ivory's violent running style. Even though Ivory, you know, he doesn't stay on the field very long. He's just not that kind of player, but he did wear down defenses. I think that helped the Jets a lot last year. And Forte just doesn't run quite like Ivory does. He just doesn't. He's more nifty. He's still physical, but he's a little more nifty.
He can run inside outside. I mean, Forte is definitely a guy that he could be a three down back. I mean, obviously he has a lot. He has mileage on him. You hear about the shelf life for running backs and how much legitimately does he have left in the tank. I mean, I wouldn't expect him not to, to have a down year per se. I mean, they're going to monitor his touches, I think, but I still think he'll be a big part of the offense. I mean, they brought him in because they still think he has plenty in the tank, and they're not going to, you know, they're going to.
Patrick's going to pick up where he left off on, you know, throwing to Marshall and Decker. I mean, that was both receivers had great years last year.
Tremendous years, and no reason to think that they both, again, if everything goes according to plan, won't have very good years again and put up big numbers again.
So, look, I mean, tight end, not much to see there for the Jets.
Jason Amaro.
Yeah, I think I saw that he came up lame while jogging today, and he was frustrated. So, who knows what – I don't know what the story is there.
Jets and tight end don't mix. The Jets and tight end never mix.
Ever since that robust Anthony Becht left the team.
Anthony Becht. How about – what was his name? Mitchell, the guy they drafted from Penn State. And then Kyle Brady and
Quincy Inouye, I think they're hoping that he's gonna he was kind of a solid third, fourth receiver last year. I think they're hoping that he's more solidified in the three. I think they still have Devin Smith. They drafted.
They do. Yeah, the guy, the second round pick last year.
You know, maybe he's a guy that can come in and be a deep threat for them. Not that Fitzpatrick has the biggest arm, but at least at least it opens up the more the middle of the field if Fitzpatrick can get off a pass or two to Devin Smith down the field. So look, and then you look this is a Todd Bowles team. Todd Bowles is a defensive minded guy. I mean, they have Chan Gailey running the offense there, who's a great offensive coordinator. But this is the Todd Bowles team, and you know, defense first. Defense was not quite as robust as you would have expected it to be last year. Maybe it's because it's Bowles' first year. But Revis is back.
And Muhammad Wilkerson is back after, you know, he talked about the prolonged, drawn-out negotiations. So he is back, and, you know, he is one of the top defensive linemen in the league. And that defensive line, talking about the Giant defensive line, that Jet defensive line should be very stout as well.
We'll see how they, of course.
And so Leonard Williams, who they, you know, their former first-round pick, who they, you know, rave about, and you know, he could end up being a Pro Bowl at level type player this year for them. But my question, I don't know what you think. I mean, Todd Bowles, you know, the Jets have been in a 3-4 base alignment for a while, and Todd Bowles is also a 3-4 guy. The question is, though, are we going to see more of like a hybrid 3-4-4-3? You know, they lost their nose tackle, Damon Harrison, to the Giants, so. They brought in a guy, I forget what his name is, but he's not really a traditional nose tackle in the sense that, he doesn't really play that technique. But so we'll see how they, you know, rotate their offensive linemen. But it should be a very good, it has the makings to be a very good Jet defense next year, or this year.
This year, that's right. This year. It's probably still too early to talk too much about strength of schedule, but it's not an easy schedule.
Oh, they have a brutal paper. I mean, the first couple months is brutal for the Jets.
But you know, I think Fitzpatrick, it's going to be tough for him to play quite as well as he did last year. I think fans just have to go into this realizing he got away with some kind of crappy throws last year, and that you don't always get away with. There's going to be a few more turnovers on his part, and it's just a matter of not letting that turn into too many points. I think he set a record for the most passing yards for a Jets quarterback last year. This is Ryan Fitzpatrick.
He had a career year. I mean, he had a tremendous season.
You say, well, he's going into a second year. It should be a smoother, you know, he knows the offense and he's with the same receivers. And yeah, I get it. I don't know. He's a year older though. And he doesn't, His arm strength is suspect to begin with. I'm hoping that the running game is is robust enough that it puts less pressure on Fitzpatrick to make plays. So, you know, the great thing is the check down is going to be, I think, a very helpful thing for Fitzpatrick, like when he used to check it down to Freddie Jackson, Buffalo. You can rely on both Forte and Powell for that. You know, with Ivory in out there, he did catch a few passes, but that's not his game.
Forte will give him that other option at the backfield, which will definitely be very helpful and beneficial to him.
Yeah.
The question for me is the Jets offensive line. That's really the biggest question mark on offense. And then you talk about the Giants offensive line, which is also a big question mark, but the Jets offensive line is too. And, you know, they lose to Bickershaw Ferguson, replace him with the former, all pro tackle on Ryan Clady, but a guy that's been injured.
Ferguson retired.
Done.
Yep. Continue.
No, I was just saying, I mean, you know, Ryan Clady comes in, who's talented, but has been injury prone. Is he right tackle? I think Giacomo, their right tackle. I think he came up with some kind of back injury or something. So hopefully he'll be healthy by the time the season starts, but, you know, struggle a little bit in pass protection. You know, you read about last year and just watching, I mean, you know, Fitzpatrick, I don't think was sacked a whole lot, but, you know, they definitely got some quarterback pressures on them, other teams' defensive lines. And so I think that's really the biggest question mark of the Jets' offense is their offensive line. We'll see how that, I mean, you know, everybody else is there other than DeBrickashaw, but so they have continuity there, which is good. But, you know, guys that are a little bit older, Giacomo, Brian Winters. So we'll see how they hold up and if they can, you know, put together a formidable line that can keep the not nimble or quick, a fleet of foot Ryan Fitzpatrick and keep him upright.
Yeah, well, and, you know, the AFC East, I think, is going to be relatively competitive. So,
yes, this is their year. No Brady the first four games. I know their schedule is hard. Their opening schedule, I mean, if they did them, the NFL schedule makers could not have done it's unbelievable that they, the year that Brady is missing the first four games, the Jets open those for their first 4 weeks with the Bengals, at Bills, at Chiefs, home Seahawks, and then at Steelers, at four to first six on the road, at Steelers, at Cardinals. I mean, this is not an that is a rough opening schedule for the Jets.
You know what? The schedule's on paper before the season starts.
Oh, of course, and you never know how things will shape out.
You don't.
Absolutely, but
the NFL is, and its league-wide parity holds true fairly well. You know, year in year out, these teams, you know, are ticketed for good years and they have bad years, and vice versa. So, you know, it's all theoretical. So,
It's just that they could not have been more cruel to the Jets, the schedule maker.
Right. So. All right, let's move on here and talk about some fantasy football now. So this is somewhat related to fantasy football. I mean, it affects all the teams. It's not specific to fantasy football, although it's a huge part of it, is injury designation tags that teams place on players. So the NFL announced like two days ago that the probable injury designation is no longer.
How about
it? It does not exist, and the reasoning behind it was apparently they must have ran some statistics and realized that 95% of the players listed as probable actually played.
Really? They just discovered it now? What I mean? Oh, look at this! Who knew? 95%
players that are almost virtually certain to play actually play.
I'm so hard pressed to think of a time that you see a player that's probable that doesn't play. I mean, you know, so often 5%.
Yeah, it happens once in a while.
It's just like comical.
So really, what's interesting though,
gamblers, the point spread. That's all it is. But the thing in the NFL is against the gambling. The gambling. Shh! Don't tell anybody. Shh.
So there was a lot of outrage on Twitter from like fantasy football writers. I think because to them it's like, oh, now there's more work because players who would have been listed as probable are now going to be listed as questionable. So you're going to have a lot more players listed as questionable this year compared to last year, obviously. And so, you know, leading up to kickoff, there's going to be a lot more players to cover to see if they're actually playing the game. And so I think a lot of these writers are in you know, fantasy and just, you know, beat writers are going to be frantically maybe frantically is stretching it a bit, but they will be more involved, you know, because the teams usually release the inactive lists between an hour and a half to an hour and 15 minutes before kickoff. So, you know, it's just going to be more work for them at that point because there's more players to cover. That are questionable.
Thing. Like, how do you like? It's now so broad. Questionable. Yes. It could mean probable. It could mean legitimately questionable. Yes. And I don't know what the percentage is on questionable players over the. You know,
it's going to be a lot higher.
The dawn of time.
It's going to be a lot higher. So, and you know, for fantasy players, like, you know, in their leagues, when, you know, certain players lock at one and others lock at four, and you know, your backup is at 1 o'clock and he's going to lock, but you have a questionable guy that's at four. What do you do? It's going to make for tougher calls. And there's going to be more instances now where you have a guy who doesn't start till 4 o'clock. Who's questionable. Your backup starts at one and you're going to have to make that decision. Do I put in the backup and get a guy that, you know, you're going to start, but, or do you gamble and wait till 4 o'clock and hope, cross your fingers that he's actually going to play. And because there's more questionable tags, there's going to be more instances where the latter decision backfires and the guy's going to be inactive and you're just going to be left with a zero. Unless you could pick up a guy off waivers at the last second. So, you know, maybe it's a signal that for leagues where, you know, players are always on waivers, maybe it adds to the argument that you should have players who are free agents until their team kicks off that week so that you can pick up, like, let's say you don't have to drop someone, but let's say a wide receiver is listed as inactive, you know, for a 4 o'clock start, you can pick up the guy that's starting in his place at least and put him in. It's an option.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, these are the little details that fantasy football managers have to consider. If you want to win championships, this is the stuff you got to do.
It's gonna make it more difficult, I will say. I mean, just, you know,
you have to pay attention to it more.
Yeah, you have to be more vigilant. Yeah, sure. And you have to, have a contingency plan. You know, you have to, like, see what kind of injury the player has. Like, what are they saying? Are they saying that, you know, are they saying he's probable to play despite his questionable tag? Okay, then you know that he would have been listed as a probable, probably will play. If he truly is questionable, and then you really have to, you know, have a decision to make. And I'm sure that they'll be a little more forthcoming, at least you would think, although I guess you don't know. I guess it's possible they won't.
No, the teams, I mean, teams like certain teams, like the Patriots are like the worst at that. They just list players and
everybody's listed. The whole
right. Yeah, exactly. So all right.
The whole team is questionable to play.
Okay, so now let's talk about some players. Let's get to this. Fantasy football player talk. So let's alternate here. So as promised last week, we said we would ask each other three players. We don't know who we're asking each other. This is a surprise for us on the fly. We're going to ask each other three players, and then we'll state what their average draft position is overall, and where they are drafted, ranked at that position, and then we have to say whether we think they're going to outperform that, come pretty close to performing at that level, or underperform it, and a little bit on the reasoning why. So I will do you a favor and let you – actually, I don't know which is better. Is it better if I have you pick a player for me to discuss, or vice versa to start? Like, do you need time to find a player to name for me, or should I just name a player for you to get it started?
I got one for you. I'm going to give you a guy that
– The floor is yours, whoever you want.
All right. Well, so
all of our league mates are listening.
So I'm kind of – this is kind of like a cheap way to, like, do it at least. I'm only going to pick one player like this, but a guy that's coming off of an injury that was very highly ranked.
Cheap.
Well, it's kind of
cheap.
Like a little, well, because you don't know. You're basing it off prior, and this guy would only be 1 year. So Kelvin Benjamin, the rookie sensation for the Carolina Panthers a couple of years ago, last year, whole year missed, was very highly ranked. So what is his ADP, Kelvin Benjamin?
So Kelvin Benjamin's ADP is Now there's a couple of different, all these different sites. All right, let's call it a 37.8.
All right.
So that's at, for a 12-team league, that's right at the beginning of the fourth round of a draft. At his position, he's being taken as the 22nd wide receiver.
Wow.
I say he underperforms that ADP, both at the position and overall. Definitely overall. So Kelvin Benjamin, look, he's coming off a devastating knee injury. He suffered it in the preseason. It was shortly before the season started too. So fantasy owners got burned who drafted him. Just an unfortunate injury.
Well, luckily our league, we did it after he got hurt. So
right, but it was still late enough in the offseason that there were a lot of leagues that already drafted.
Yeah.
Anyway, so look, it's a guy coming off of an ACL tear. These guys, you never know if they're going to match the level they were at the year previous. I think Benjamin, though, scored a lot of touchdowns in his rookie season. And I think that – I'd have to double check this, but I think that over – let's say it – you know, touchdowns obviously are the money in fantasy football. I just think that it shielded his deficiencies as a player. He's kind of inconsistent. He makes really good plays, but he's not a guy that you can rely on every throw. He's not a guy. He's a guy that, you know, fights for contested balls more than a guy that, you know, is a crisp route runner. And did he luck into some touchdowns? I'm trying to quickly pull up here.
Say it was only 1 year sample size, and
right. And yeah. I think people are, you know, let's see. He had 9 touchdowns, 73 catches, 1,000 yards, which for a rookie, I mean, is phenomenal numbers. It's not the longest of lists of rookie receivers who hit 1,000 yards. I mean, it just rookie receivers are. Well, recently we've seen that, I think, with more frequency than in the past. But I would say that those numbers are probably an absolute ceiling for him, and he's being drafted to do more than that. I would temper my expectations for Kelvin Benjamin. So my turn. Okay.
So should I comment on your assessment of Kelvin Benjamin?
Sure.
I don't have to. I mean, I named a player, you gave yours, and we can. Oh, you know, forget it. Nah. Well, you to me now.
All right. So the player I have for you is Matthew Stafford. he is ADP is 139. Now, keep in mind, quarterbacks are pretty low on ADP generally, but it is at his position, which is a little more telling, is the 17th quarterback.
See. So what was it again? 139?
Yeah, but I think more focus is on the rank within his position, which is 17.
Oh, okay. So 17. I'm going to say he is going to underperform that again. He had a terrible year last year, large in part because his offensive line was terrible. I don't know. I don't think Detroit has improved their offensive line that much. They obviously lose Calvin Johnson. I know Calvin Johnson was not the same player as he had been, but that's still a big loss for that offense. They really haven't replaced. I mean, I don't think there's anybody notable that they replaced him with. Golden Tate's a nice player. You know, he's a good player, but I'm not really bullish right now on that Detroit line offense. And Matthew Stafford, we know he could be very much a boom or bust type of guy. He's talented. He's very talented, Matthew Stafford. I mean, you know, he was a former first overall pick. I mean, this guy, and he's put up some, you know, very good numbers in his career. I think personally he will underperform that. Not by much. I mean, 17 obviously is not that high, but I don't think he... I'm not a fan of that Detroit line offense coming into this season. Their offensive line, again, is one of the biggest reasons why, because the offensive line last year for Detroit was terrible, absolutely brutal. And I don't, from what I've seen, I don't think they've improved it that much. Maybe it's improved a little bit, but I'm not a big believer in the Detroit line offense, and that's going to hurt Matthew Stafford.
All right. I'm up.
All right. Let's see here. Let's see. I mean, I guess it's not really any fun to give like a really highly ranked guy unless, well, I guess maybe if it's a guy that you think is going to stink. how about a guy that's kind of coming into his own that maybe jumped up really high? Hey, you know what? I got one. I'm not in love with it, but all right. Carlos Hyde, running back for the 49ers. Carlos Hyde.
All right. Carlos Hyde, his ADP is 42.5. So you're talking middle of the fourth round. And positionally, the 16th running back in the NFL. I'm taking it as position. You know, I think that's about right. So what's going for Carlos Hyde this year is his coach. Chip Kelly is now running the San Francisco 49ers. And we all know Chip Kelly runs a heck of a lot more plays, as his teams run a heck of a lot more plays on offense. And Carlos Hyde's going to certainly benefit from that. Now, the big question for Carlos Hyde is who is handing him the football? So that's not even decided right now. And we're, you know, 2 weeks away from the NFL kicking off. If Colin Kaepernick can somehow get it together and get to the level that he was at that brought that team to a Super Bowl, man, Carlos Hyde can really – Carlos Hyde is a very talented runner. He's not necessarily the best catching receiver out of the backfield, although I've heard some rumblings that they're going to try to change that. I think his competition is next to nil. I think it's Sean Drawn is and Mike Davis. You know, so there's really no one else there to threaten Hyde for carries. It's his backfield. So, you know, yeah, I mean, it's Sean Drawn. So he's going to be fed the football. There's no question. It's just a matter of, I guess, is he going to be victim of game script? So if the Niners go down two scores or three scores in the second quarter or early third quarter, is he going to be able to stay on the field and be catching dump off passes, or are they going to use a hurry up back? If it's the former, then he's a lock to exceed his ADP. So that's the question.
All right,
my turn for you. So we did a Giants preview, and this I don't think I even heard this guy's name mentioned. So where else do it but here? And that his name is Sterling Shepard. So Sterling Shepard is ADP is 92.8. So that's like at the end of like round seven. That's pretty high,
wow.
Right?
Wow.
For a rookie. His position rank draft is the 40th wide receiver taken in fantasy. This is PPR, by the way. So tell us what you think about Sterling Shepard.
The Giants love Sterling Shepard. He was a second round pick. You're right. I didn't talk about him. I didn't talk about Odell Beckham either. Or,
right. Mentioned him.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Sterling Shepard is a guy the Giants love. They rave about him. He's a rookie, but he is a guy that they feel like you can line him up anywhere on the field and he can make every catch. He is a guy that is a great route runner. He is, at least what you hear, he is a good, very good route runner, very good hands, but a guy that you can stick anywhere. You can line him up wide. You can line him up in the slot, almost like Victor Cruz. And now, you know, we're not going to compare him to Victor Cruz yet, and I think he definitely plays a different style from Cruz, but, you know, he's not the fastest guy out there. He doesn't have eye-popping combine, you know, numbers, 40 and vertical leap and all that nonsense, but he is a guy that the Giants think can really settle into their offense. Question is, how many targets is he going to get? How are they going to ease him into the offense? Is he going to be a big focal point early in the season, or they, you know, obviously depending on Victor Cruz, that's
a problem, yeah.
Part and parcel as to whether or not, you know, Sterling Shepard will live up to his ADP. If Victor Cruz is playing, and if he's, you know, a big part of the offense, then Sterling Shepard's numbers may be minimized a bit. But if not, if he's on the team or he's injured or whatever, and Sterling Shepard is essentially your number two option, which he may not be initially, but may very well elevate himself to. He could very easily at least get, I mean, it is high, 40 is high, but he can, I think, I won't say exceed, but I think he can definitely approach and ease into somewhere in that range. Okay. Of, let's say 38 to 44, whatever range for wide receivers.
Just by comparison, Victor Cruz is being taken as the 77th wide receiver.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's a giant question mark. Again, no pun. They love Shepard. And again, depending on what happens, how they run their offense, he can very, very easily fall in that range. Okay. So that'll be my prediction.
All right.
All right. Next. Oh, that's me. All right. I'm going to give you one of your guys. Maybe our audience doesn't know, but he is a hip guy. You may know where I'm going. Also, coming off of an injury, but he's kind of low. His ranking's a little bit lower than what it normally would be. Tony Slomo, a.k.a. Tony Romo.
All right. So Tony Romo is ADP is 135. He's being taken as the 14th quarterback.
Okay.
I 14th quarterback, I can see it. I'm just worried that he's now I think he's now 36 years old. He might be older.
I knew he was definitely 36. Wow.
Let me check.
Old man, Tony Romo.
Tony Romo is 36 years old. Oh. So I just when he gets hit hard, he doesn't get up now. I mean, he used to get up more. But you saw it last year. And he took a hammering last year, and the team suffered as a result. I would say, look, the potential is there for Tony Romo to be a top five quarterback. I mean, there's no question with the weaponry around him. Now they have, Ezekiel Elliott, who's going to replace the Darren McFadden show from last year.
Don't forget Joseph Randall.
And Joseph Randall, and maybe Philip Tanner got a carry.
Philip Tanner.
Oh, they have Lance Dunbar, who's
I've heard about Lance.
They have the talent for him to be a top five quarterback, but it's all going to be on his arm. And I don't know, man. Like he's had this back injury that seems to keep coming back, and it's hard for me to get excited about him knowing that he's going to probably miss some games. I just don't see him staying upright for a full 16 games now at 36. He's not getting up on these kinds of hits anymore. Is he going to be able to avoid it? He used to be really good at moving in the pocket and avoiding it and making throws on the run.
Stiles has one of the top offensive lines.
That's in his favor, and he can make plays. And so if he's on the field, he's going to make plays. I would have a contingency plan, and in one quarterback league, that's fine. I mean, that's easy to do. If it's a two quarterback league, well, you better pay up for that backup quarterback to use, because I don't even know who their backup is this year. But
idiot. I'm not even sure.
So that's my thoughts on Tony Romo.
All right.
Was that two guys you asked of me, or three already?
That's three.
Who was the first? I already forgot.
Carlos
Hyde, Tony Romo,
Benjamin Hyde,
Calvin Benjamin,
and Slomo.
Right. So who's last but not least? All right, I don't think you're going to see this one coming, but why not? You know who he is. Austin Seferian Jenkins.
Austin Seferian Jenkins.
So he is the he's being taken with an ADP of 157. So getting pretty deep here. So that would be like in the 13th round, end of the 13th round, start of the 14th round, as the 19th overall tight end.
He's extremely talented. He is that prototypical big athletic tight end that this league has been moving towards with the Gronkowskis and Jimmy Grahams and those types. And I think Austin Seferian Jenkins can very easily exceed that. In fact, I'm going to predict that he will. He has a quarterback that I think likes utilizing his tight end. I guess technically he's coming into camp as the number two behind Cameron Brate, but I mean, let's be up fair. I mean, you look at those two guys. I mean, there's no question who the more talented player is. And I think last year he had his moments, but he was injured at the beginning of the season. You know, had a few moments. Towards the end of the season. But, you know, just inconsistent, and, you know, they just need to see that he can be a much more consistent player, be healthy and stay on the field, and, you know, be able to incorporate himself into the offense by blocking and all that. But I think Lawson Severian Jenkins can definitely exceed that ranking. Again, he's just a very, very talented player. Just extremely athletic. You know, his hands may not be the best. I mean, I'm not as familiar with, you know, his pass catching abilities in terms of his hands, but I think he definitely is a guy that could be a breakout type candidate this year at the tight end position. I mean, tight end is not, you know, it's a little deeper than in years past. It's not just your Gronkowski and Jimmy Graham. Well, Jimmy Graham has definitely dropped a lot. But I think he will definitely I think he will have a good year, and I think he will exceed 19. How far much he exceeds it remains to be seen, but he's talented enough, and I think he will get enough reps and enough looks and touches or targets that he will exceed that.
Did you see that one coming?
I did not. I did have him though last year. I did pick him up.
I was looking at actually some of the players you had last year because I thought you probably had more film knowledge on these guys comparatively. So I thought they would be good ones to talk about. All right. Well, the last but not least segment for tonight, which has been a kind of a long show now. That's okay.
We hope that you are still with us. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Of course, and subscribe to us on – we're supposed to say this at the beginning, but
all right. Yeah.
I guess we don't care enough to remember to say it. Subscribe to us on iTunes or on Stitcher for the Android users. Follow us on Twitter or on Facebook and show us some love. Yes. So the Hipster Beer of the Week is another local brewery that we haven't given acknowledgement to yet. And that is Single Cut Beersmiths, located in Astoria. The beer that we are touting tonight is called I think I have the wrong one here. And this is embarrassing.
Which
it's
Silver
the
Cut?
It's the Mo Shuggy the name. The Mo Shuggy Soulbender IPA.
Nice.
The beer of the week. Is it Soulbender? Mo Shuggy Soulbender IPA. Is it a double IPA? I don't think so. Well, it's one of these rotating IPAs that is just a crisp hoppiness. So there's a lot of citrus, peachy senses that you get when you drink this IPA. I do not like IPAs that are overwhelming with the hops. I like some crispness, but when it's dominated by the hops, I don't want to finish it. This one is a great balance. It has it's like more of a fruity, hoppy IPA. And Single Cup Beersmiths is known for, they have a lot of different IPAs and a lot of other beers. They're pretty well known in the area now. So,
do they have any sours?
Well, you and I tried their Kim Hibiscus Sour.
Oh, right. Actually. Yeah, we did. That's right.
And yeah. They did have it at the store that I told you to go to. They had it there when I went. Missed it there or not in there. You probably didn't. You missed it.
Wait, the Sea Town.
Yeah, no, the store that you went that I told you to go to and you did go to.
Oh.
Last Friday. They had it when I saw it when I was there, but I didn't buy it because we already tried it together. So I wanted to get something else.
All right.
But they, yeah. So, well, fortunately for you, you live in the vicinity of where this brewery is. So you're naturally going to find it even in like the bodegas. But it's, you know, it's a good brewery and it's a good beer. So, I suggest trying it, and that's a wrap. So, you and I have to talk about trying to figure out when to do a show next week because my schedule is all over the place. I hope we can figure out when to do one.
Well, we do have our fantasy auction, so it will not be that night.
I know. Well, that's 2 weeks from now.
No, is that next week?
Yes, oh, I'm sorry. Week. I'm sorry. You're right. It's a week it from is, tomorrow.
It is right. A week from from tomorrow.
That's right. Our auction is a week from tomorrow. And we're gonna have to talk about this. So we'll see. There may not be a show next week but if there's not, we're definitely gonna have one before the NFL season starts, which is
absolutely.
Which is Thursday, August 8th. I'm sorry, September 8th. So until next time. Yes.
Oh, and the Mets lost again. Now they're 5 back in a wild card. So,
all right, next. And Gary Sanchez hit another home run.
What is he up to, like 20 now or something?
9 in 21 games.
Oh, right. God. All right.
All right.
All right. All right. Bye.
All right. Bye. Well, thanks for tuning in. And
yes, thank you. If you stay with us the whole time, then all right. Bye.